Triple M 40 is the number one football call on radio. Footy's on the radio. And your front row. Welcome to the Friday Rub for McDonald's Monopoly. Triple M rocks finals footy.
We're at the MCG and this is going to be absolutely magnificent. The Western Bulldogs keeping the dream alive, taking on the Hawks for a spot in the prelim final. Have the Hawks got a gasp left in this amazing group of footballers? We will find out tonight as the Dogs and the Hawks go hard at it. The Coliseum, the home of footy. Before we get to that, Brett Ratton, attached to the coaching staff at Hawthorn, will speak to us. So will Daniel G and Syracuse, a man with extraordinarily small teeth. We're going to hear from him as well. And before any of that happens, we've got the best minds in the business in the Triple M box to dissect the week in footy, what we're about to see tonight and tomorrow. And for the rest of the season, I speak of Chris Judd, who's just looking, a bit more laid back and casual and relaxed than he wore a three-piece suit in the first time he came in, Judd. I think he's now realised he doesn't need to roll quite as sartorially splendid as that. And now it's just a jean T-shirt set up. Hello, Chris.
Hello, JB. Very good to be here.
Need to get to the bottom of what you did tonight too, because that is almost the greatest crime you can commit in the Triple M footy. We'll get to that in a moment. Hello, Purple.
Hello, Jim. I think Chris didn't appreciate the Wolfpack giving him some honest feedback about how he looks, so he's just... It's a bit more real these days, Juddy.
It's the breakfast of champions feedback, and I've taken it all on board.
And the Chief's never given a stuff what anyone thinks. Hello to you, Chief.
Hello, Jim. Hello, everyone. Looking forward to this one. Ooh. Toss of the coin game. I will say this. When I saw the Duke wander in, is there a strut in his step?
Yeah. He got a nice presence about him.
Walked into the room out there, and a lady handed him a coffee. It was ready and waiting for him. He just said, thank you. Kept walking. He is up and about, the boy.
Got a nice look about you, Duke.
There's always a strut in my step, Jim, so nothing has changed on that front. This side of the draw is very interesting. The Hawthorn get through for a chance at four-peat. GWS get through to the grand final. The Bulldogs get through to the grand final. So either way, we're going to see a great couple of weeks coming up. I think some history being made one way or another.
No doubt. And the Bulldog bandwagon's been a pretty crowded place in the last 4 or 5 days. Everyone's jumping on.
It feels like the football world, if you're not associated with the Chiefs club and what they're trying to do, I think everyone... That one premiership, Jim, a long time ago, I think there's a fair bit of goodwill in the football world that maybe they get a bit of a break and things go their way.
Well, we will see all of that tonight, but we need to get straight to the elephant in the room. And and that is that the car park passes here at the MCG. I don't get the hullabaloo about these, by the way, but there seems to be a lot of conjecture as to where they go and how they're distributed, Chief. But all I know is tonight... the two-time Brownlow medalist, former premiership captain of the West Coast Eagles, in possession of one.
Yep.
Very sought after on a Friday
night.
Which in
itself is an amazing thing that's happened.
Very sought after on a Friday night when there'll be 80,000, difficult to get a park anywhere else. You go straight in underneath. Then witnessed walking with a security guard, by the way, into the ground, having not used his pass. Now, Juddy, these are the most sought-after things. You could say to a commentator, I'll give you $1,000 cash or a car park pass and they'll take the latter and you haven't even used it.
Well, first off the bat, I'd like to thank the Triple M family for the car park pass. I think that's the most important thing I want to get off the off my chest.
Yes.
And technically, I did forget to use it tonight, Jim. I've had a lot on my mind and forgot to use it. I do feel for the Chief. I feel we're really starting to build a connection here.
Well, why is there a technical issue around this, Juddy?
Well, that's just the way, that's sort of the language I'm framing it with.
This is reprehensible behaviour. an absolutely unconscionable act. They are like hen's teeth, and you just whizzed it up against the wall, mate. You can't do that.
Well, I have seen the hurt in Chief's eyes.
You can see
There's no debating that. And
Chief, I think more to the point that Juddy got one over you. You've been doing Triple M for 15 years, and you've had to go and park in the street.
I've walked down.
You walked out?
I only get one every 6 weeks anyway, Warren. So I value them when I get them. But such is the swagger of the new kid on the block. He can tear them up and flush them down the toilet. Doesn't care. He thinks they grow on trees.
I drove down Swan Street on my way here, and I looked out the window, and there was a sort of pretty suave-looking bald unit walking away from the MCG. This is not that long ago. And I thought, geez, that looks a little like
I went
Juddy.
To get a quick pasta before the game.
Is that where we're going with
it? I had the option. I was on the phone to the big nose producer, Luke Tunnicliffe, as he's affectionately referred to. And I was on my way here. He said, are you happy with your car park pass? In which I said, it's sitting at home. And I then had that decision. Do I go home and forfeit my pasta or punch on through? grab the pasta and use my boyish good looks and charm to talk my way in, which I is what I successfully did.
I do notice that he didn't try what he did last week.
That's yeah. it.
And then he's lob up underground and say, listen, I left my pass at home, but I actually do have one. Can I get in?
Is there any chance I can get in?
I think he's a little gun shy after getting moved away.
Chief, you asked Luke if he got a pass because he tried to make it as though he did, no, but we know he did.
The people's champ he referred to himself as.
I am always out there. I like to get a feel for what's happening around the ground first, wander around.
On your kids and wife. Are you underneath this ground?
Catch up with a few people. Duke. I will be at the car park later on tonight.
You have a feel for one thing.
What's that, Joe?
Frightening.
You have come a long way from the South Adelaide Bogan that slipped across to play for the Western Bulldogs. The last time you went out to the Witten Oval, you lobbed in a helicopter. You're now living in Scotch Hill.
That was well received, by the way.
You're wearing gloves when you're hosting live television. You have changed a bit.
You wear sunglasses at nightclubs.
Mate, I know exactly where I came from. I just don't spend a lot of time there. That's just the way it is these days.
How has it been? You would watch it closer than the rest of us, but we all saw the vision on the news of the thousands of people out at the Witten Oval watching training. It's got a nice buzz about it. Even if tonight doesn't go the way the Western Bulldogs fans hope to, it's still there's plenty of momentum.
Well, Jimmy, I relive it again through my kids' eyes. They are all beside themselves tonight. They'll all be here in one shape or another. And the joy that it brings to a lot of people, particularly when you're a club that hasn't regularly been out here on the MCG, hasn't had a history of winning premierships and to win big finals like that in the West. And there is a sense that at the moment that group of people from the coach to the board to the players and everyone in that environment are building something that looks pretty sustainable in terms of success. So it is great. The loyal supporters, as you would see at North Melbourne, you know, in any club, this changes their life. It changes their well-being. It changes their attitude to work. So as much as we get to sit in the best seat in the house, there is a fair bit of joy associated with what the Bulldogs are doing.
Given how much players train these days, I imagine there are days where it becomes a little bit tedious, a little bit workmanlike, and you just try to battle through the day. But come finals, the best part about being a player was when you used to train in front of 5,000 people at training. The ball would be pinging around. It was almost like match day, and you had so much fun. They were the best days to train.
And that's what I've loved about the bye week. I know a lot of people aren't a big fan of it, but the Bulldogs would have been rolled out last week without a question. They wouldn't have been able to go back over. You got 10 days for all of the people that, you know, don't get the chance to see. They went to training, who went to the Bulldog shop, who bought a jumper this time of the year, who got to savour the fact that they won 15 home and away games. So I think that's an element that of that extended week leading into round one that is worth considering for the fans that get the chance to get down to training and enjoy what it is.
Chief Juddy and the rest of his club back in the 80s and 90s, early 90s, were a touch greedy though, because they had sort of 5 weeks of extra training sessions annually. 8 straight grand finals, was it, Chief?
Seven.
And then a one-off and then another one. Mm. So 8 in 9 years. Mm. Yeah, so that's a little bit greedy, Chief.
Not really. We worked hard for them. I didn't play them all, but we worked hard for them, Jim, that's for sure. Mm. But they are the memories you treasure. And they seriously are. When you hear applause for every single touch on the training track, it's an amazing feeling. It's what you worked so hard for the previous 9 months.
So when you made yourself unavailable in 87, Chief, which is what Dermot always says, does that now not sit badly with you?
Not at all.
He reckons he just...
You lost the game you should have won, Chief.
You should have won it, and you would have helped them win it.
Well, how'd they go without me? Play? How'd they go, Chief? I'll tell you for a fact right now, I actually got ruled out by Alan Jeans because I did a fitness test on the Thursday night at training, and I was gasping. I was going up and down. The ankle was very dodgy.
Yep.
And Rod Lester-Smith was doing some one-on-one with me. Snuffy was trying to get me through. He was half pushing me into the ball, saying, come on, mate, keep going. Mm. And I was absolutely rooted. And they were just giving me contest after contest after contest. And because I wasn't known for being an aerobic beast, Jim.
Yes.
And it was going to be a 30-degree day on the weekend. Mm. The coach just sort of said, I'm not sure we can go with you.
Were you dirty on that,
quite
too?
Have the, no.
It's just, I mean, seriously.
It was the right decision because my ankle was gone.
And then Dermot played on David Rhys-Jones.
How'd he go?
And David Rhys-Jones won the North Smith medal.
Oh, that's interesting.
when you speak to Dermot about that era and you say, you know, 5-time day, 5-time night, premiership superstar, he always says should have been 6 and fully blames Piggy. Said Piggy's fault because he put himself before the club.
Well, I missed 2 games. I missed the prelim and the grand final. I did it in the second semi because Soss Went to smother it and dived across my my leg, and it, mate, it was no good.
You were named, though, weren't you? And it was only the morning of it became apparent, wasn't it? I remember being at the ground, and it sort of swept the crowd that you're out. It was a, you knew that on the Thursday, did you?
I did, and I actually did the warm-up on game day, and Darren Pritchard warmed up in a closed room in the sort of in the back reaches of the dressing rooms.
Was it a pain tolerance issue, Chief? Because it can be a little bit sooky sometimes.
Please, play through barriers you would never have even looked at, Duke. But there were, it's fair to say, that was back in the days where they would open the rooms and people could watch you warm up for the grand final. And I did get comments from a few people afterwards saying, we watched you warm up. We're so glad you didn't play, because I didn't have a jab to do the warm-up. I would have needed multiple jabs to play. But I was like a busted going up and down on the spot in the warm-up.
Juddy, you'd think you'd get up, wouldn't you? I mean, that's how spoilt they were. He just had played in that many that he actually didn't give a stuff. But most footballers would actually play with a leg dangling off, wouldn't they?
Well, I'm looking at the Chief, and the Chief's a bit. I mean, the Chief's a bit like the big brother I never had. So I'm loath to go too hard at him. But Dermot was playing with broken ribs, that's it, wasn't he?
A hairline fracture of one rib. What you don't understand, Jim, and this is what you'll never understand, Jim, is sometimes the greatest sacrifice is to not be selfish and not to think that you can do everything and think of the bigger picture.
I think at that stage, Chief, you just thought, I played in enough and I'm good enough and these blokes can do it on their own. But that's my sort of reading.
And the snowboarding trip booked for a couple of sprint sessions.
You just thought to yourself, you know what? Maybe, in fact, I think this might have even been more it, Chief. I reckon he might have said, maybe it'll do these blokes good. To realise that when I'm out, the thing falls apart.
That makes a lot of sense. Knowing the Chief as we do, that's very plausible.
Believe that. Well, let's just cast your mind back. I have a feeling I was somewhere in the 90s in terms of goals for the season. Hadn't kicked 100 before. Do you reckon I was going to pull out if I had the chance to play
his own career?
was that just a stat that came off the top of the head then? From
no, but if that doesn't... let Chief. You know how ooh, much mate. I would have played if I could have. There's something wrong with it.
One thing we know is that he will always put himself first, Chief. No, in any situation.
Never, ever.
He's declared that...
Never, ever.
I think Juddy's expression there told us all we need to know, Duke. He just cannot believe a man couldn't get up to play in the grand final.
Given that Dermot did.
That's it.
And Jim, that Fife last year, you played with a broken leg in a prelim final just to try and get to a grand final.
Exactly.
And how'd they go?
It was the courage that man showed.
So more important to show courage
into the game,
and play and get beaten than give yourself
the
chance to play 22 fit players.
You can get him on nights when Hawthorn play in a big final. He's edgy.
What's wrong with you, mate?
I think you turned then, Chief. I've never heard you talk about your own stats then like you did about 90
goals. The point
goals.
I was making was if I had any chance of playing, I would have.
No, I know the point you're making, but normally you don't revert to that.
Kick the lazy 90 plus, I think was the point.
I think it was 97.
Duke. I've known the Chief for a long time, and this is with he and Dermot, and we know that, that things aren't
it's
always
not a great
good
relationship.
There. This is always the sorest point, the 87 grand final, because Dermot said we're all carrying plenty, but one bloke refused to get to the line and cost us all an extra flag.
Jeez, we picked the scab tonight, and Chief's really cracked it tonight.
Scab there, Duke. I thought it was one of the most selfless acts I've ever committed, actually. Particularly given I had zero input into the decision itself.
The winner is into a prelim final. The loser, it's all over. And for Hawthorn, Chief, that would be unprecedented. I don't think they've lost two games in a row since 2011, the Hawks, let alone two finals and out.
Yeah, it's a good record, isn't it? But, you know, you just keep thinking they've been at the top for so long. How long can they keep finding ways to stay there? Jim, it's a big test tonight. I think if the Bulldogs are good enough to play at the, you know, close to the level that they did last week, they're going to make life very, very difficult for the Hawks. But the other side of the coin, I guess, is this mob just keep finding ways to win games, don't they?
Does history mean anything? I think the Hawks have beaten the Western Bulldogs the last eight times they've played. Does it matter at all?
A lot of those eight don't include half the blokes that are playing, so I tend not to worry too much about those sort of things.
Round three was a brilliant game. Yep. Bob Murphy did his knee, but watched a bit of that during the week, and that was high quality end-to-end. And there's the intrigue to me as well of... you know, Luke Beveridge's history at Hawthorn. Yep. He's going to have a great intimate knowledge of the way Hawthorn go about it, and be intriguing to see, you know, what he does matchup wise. Always find that interesting, particularly in a big final. So I see this one being very even right from the start, Juddy?
The start was pretty important at round three game. I think the Hawks got the jump on the Bulldogs. Yep. They might have got the first four goals, yep, and then it really evened up after that. But the Bulldogs can't take as long to settle as they did in round three tonight.
I thought, Juddy, last week, the game we watched, that Hawks, for what it's worth, I thought they had actually had the better of the game, if you're talking about the whole 100% of the game. But they had issues both ends of the ground, which you very rarely see. Firstly, distributing out a half-back, which is normally an absolute pillar of what Hawthorn do. I didn't think Birchall had a great time kicking the footy. I think Campbell Brown said that on the rush hour today, and I agreed with him that, you know, he was a bit jittery and a few others were too. And the small forwards were nowhere near as impactful as they normally are. So there's upside for the Hawks.
There is. Yeah, I mean, I was a bit the same. I left feeling more impressed with what the Hawks did than probably what the Cats did, and felt like they controlled the game for longer. Birchall turned the ball over a little bit. There were still long periods of the game where the Hawks did just control the ball off the half-back line, and they just had way too many uncontested marks. So I think one of the keys that the Bulldogs really try and shut down tonight is that uncontested ball for the Hawks.
And the little forwards, haven't seen enough of the Western Bulldogs defence to know. I know they like to scatter gun and take off. Are they going to be able to do that with Rioli, Pioppolo, Bruce?
That'll make you nervous, because any one of those could kick five or six and be the match winner. You know, Bruce, Pioppolo and Rioli. You can throw Gunston in as that mid forward in that mix as well. So, I mean, they do team defend. They won't just have a single match up for one of those. It won't be Dale Morris on Rioli the whole time. He'll roll over to any one of the three. So with that comes risk that you do get, you know, mismatch at times. And they are attacking, and they will try and set up a lot of their game from back there. So there'll be some nervous moments, I'm sure.
Juddy, the theory you have about what the Bulldogs did last week when they reintroduced five long-term, in inverted commas, injured players into that elimination final team, backing up 1 week later. Can you just expand on those thoughts you expressed on Footy Classified on Monday night, just for those who didn't hear them, and just the reservations you've got about the backing up component to it?
Yeah, I think the second week is often harder than the first week for a couple of reasons. Firstly, for those Bulldogs guys that hadn't played for 4, 5, 6 weeks, some of them, the fact that they haven't been banging into bodies for a long period of time means that while they might not be completely match fit, they are fresh and they're not sore. And so they've experienced soreness from a game for the first time in an extended period last week. So you've got to deal with that. But also mentally, when you haven't played for a long time, you can overcompensate in your own mind what's coming and make out it's going to be even harder than what it is. And that often contributes to players playing well. And then once you've got one game out of your system, you go, oh, this is all right, I've got this covered. And you often have a bit of a lull the second week. So it'd be interesting to see how those guys bounce back this week.
You know, Bill Brownless on the rush hour today, Juddy, went with almost that identical sentence. And at the end of it, I said, you've done a lunch this week where someone said that. That there's no way you've come up with that on your own. And he said, no, it just occurred to me that maybe in the build-up to this game, a couple of these dogs have got to back up. Now I know, Purple, exactly where it's come from.
There you go.
He'd never had an original thought in his life, Bill. I can see him through the glass, and he's absolutely helped himself to that. Now I know where it's come from.
Do you subscribe to that, Darce, yourself?
Yeah, there's risk. I think the main two with that will be McRae and Liberatore, because they came from the extended period and they would have had their bodies banged
up. And Wood as well?
Not so much, I don't think. Okay. He played the week before and half rolled his ankle. Yeah. And so he had
it looked
missed.
A bit sore last week, though, still.
It was a different injury.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay.
He actually rolled the other ankle. So okay. And apparently trained fine. It was a really minor ankle roll, and he'll be okay. But Liberatore and McRae, I think, definitely fall into Juddy's category, and I think they'll be interesting tonight.
Well, we will find out all about it and have a big preview for it too. A couple of things we need to discuss with you. Ship-off coming very, very shortly, by the way, and I know the Wolfpack will get right around that. The pack's assembled. Anything purple out of them early?
Yeah, they've loved that chat that we had with Chief Jim that you drove in the first segment.
It's just updated as I was speaking, but that's certainly one.
Yeah, Georgie Karapis, one of, if not the juiciest openings of the year, with Juddy choosing passer over the pass and the rarity of the Chief being on the ropes, Triple M footy. The way this rubber's bubbling along, ship off will be huge and someone will be wearing a fried rice hat. That's Ash Harvey, Chief on fire. Trent sent that one through.
Have you even noticed that almost been non-existent since, Chief?
So yeah.
I don't know whether he's just shut up shop on the back of it.
No doubt about that.
But I haven't heard him speak since the first break, Chief.
You're kidding.
You haven't offered
it. We were just having a discussion about a number of things before.
And you didn't
speak.
But
if you want to keep trying to proliferate this sort of theme that you're trying to run with, you've
dirtied up a bit tonight, Chief.
Duke, honestly, if you could say anything that would make me dirty up, I'll give the game away.
Oh! I think it's a rare soft spot.
It is. Yeah, I know
the
it
87
is because...
grand final. It's very rare. You can't get the chief anywhere near, even uncomfortable in his seat.
And
but
I'm with
bring
that
up, and it sort of gets him.
That pack member, I wouldn't order any fried rice here tonight because I think someone could wear a bowl of it if there was some available to him.
How many goals did Kuk in that year, chief? 97, was it?
That's 30 years ago.
Right. Yeah, fried rice.
Staggering.
Long ago is that?
Yep, it is. And what a staggering thing that is. Not often discussed that for mine. 8 grand final appearances in 9 years. What the hell's that?
Ridiculous,
isn't
it?
No one will get anywhere near that.
It used to be handy every other year. Then the Hawks would just go and grab John Platten from South Australia and grab Darren Jarman.
Ben
and,
Allen from Western Australia.
Tony Hall.
But they were the days where you could go and pick any two interstate players and sign them on form fours.
Yep.
And then, well, then it became the draft. But you could just go and get two high-profile interstate players. So it was made for an exciting competition. Because each club would go and do it.
I was going to say, other clubs could have done it too.
South Australians, didn't they?
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They did, and the West Australians for North Melbourne did a very nice job too. But none of those clubs appeared in 8 out of 9 years, mind you. Chris Judd was one of them as well, going the other way.
North had a good stint in the 70s, Jim, in a row, in consecutive grand finals, 74 through to 78, with a drawn one in between.
Ron Joseph, the architect of that, he was a very good Form 4 operator.
Yeah. And a brown paper bag operator.
Get on a plane and just make sure that he came back with them. and an absolute magician at making it
happen.
There's
a lot of those guys that signed, took cars. I mean, a lot of the South Australian players, and then never fronted.
Rat got a car out of Carlton and never gave it back.
Never gave it back. There's a lot of... Gary McIntosh was a champion South Australian.
Yes, he
got two or three done and then never ever came over and fronted up.
I think Tony McGuinness as well. One might have ended up with him.
How could you keep it if you weren't going there? I don't understand. They ring up and they say, listen, can we get the car back? No. I like it. I think I'll keep it. How do you do that?
That didn't happen to you up at Zilmere Chief when they came at
Cooperoo.
They
offered me a pushy, Jim. A little trike. And said,
they didn't come to you and say,
that.
Look, here's a Commodore.
What was your inducement to come down?
At my first year, I got a $10,000 contract plus match payments.
Okay.
Massive dollars, Warrior. Massive.
What would have been, the first year was 84?
85.
85. What would the highest paid, Lee Matthews, what would he have earned that year?
I couldn't even hazard a guess.
Like 200 grand? Would that be the...
Somewhere between, I guess, 100 and 130.
Did Lethal speak to you much?
Not a lot. Didn't speak to a lot of people, Barn. He just kind of went about his business. He's a surly little critter, too.
Well, he was exiting the game, wasn't he? That was his last year.
That was his last year. And you do tend to get a little bit cranky as you're sort of winding down your career.
How far into the year did he utter his first sentence to you, Chief? Because... He wouldn't have known about you at that stage coming down from Cooper.
And you're trying to take his spot too. He's trying to hang on to a full forward role.
I think I played in round 3, so I would have played with him then. And he would have had to talk to me at some stage.
We were talking on the back of the Adelaide final. Eddie Betts kicked his 70th goal for a year as a small forward. Lethal did that 7 years out of 9 years, kicked 70-plus goals as a midfield small forward.
He was ridiculous. A freak. The number of goals back then that the good on-ballers used to kick, they just used to run forward and they'd kick 3 a week. It was extraordinary stuff.
But he kicked 900 in his career.
Well, the other thing people don't realise, he was a rover that went and played full forward. Rover. Like, he's like 5'9" and went and took hangers and played on the best defenders in the game and still kicked bags.
And had the ability to club people.
Oh, and club them real good too. You didn't get clubbed twice by Barn because once did the job.
Didn't you get Keith Gregg in one of those grand finals?
Would have.
Down that end.
He was... when you look at it statistically, because obviously at our club we think Duck's the best player ever, it's very hard to argue against Lee Matthews. How do you kick 900 goals as a rover?
One of those years he played as a full-time midfielder and kicked 90, I think, Chief, in one of the early years. It's just ridiculous.
The Dogs are out there having a kick to the punt road end. The Hawks, a couple of their players are out there. It looks like Isaac Smith. Not far from the spot from last week. We've got Luke Darcy in the house, as is Jason Dunstall, Damien Barrett and Chris Judd. Speaking of Isaac Smith, Chief, how will the week have been for him? We unfairly hang a player often who misses a shot after the siren because there's been 2 hours of footy prior to that. How would he have got over it all?
I think he'd be fine, Jim. It's interesting to see him just having a couple of shots from that same spot. I think that shows a bit of character too, the fact that you're happy to go out there and do it.
Yep.
He's the sort of bloke that loves those moments, happy to put himself in the situation, and should it arise again, would be just as happy to go and do the same thing. So there are some players who probably wouldn't recover as well from that. I think he's one that would recover pretty well.
Game scrutinised now more than it's ever been, and we look at every bit of nuance. The thing that's just that blew me away this week was that there was people talking about the fact that he smiled on his way back and that there was some sort of arrogance associated with... I mean, we're all body language experts.
He smiled at Mitch because Mitch actually said something just to kind of just have a bit of fun with him, you know.
And even that's analysed to the point where, you know, that was apparently the wrong thing to do this week.
Only because he missed.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has their own way of handling pressure. Some will laugh, some will smile, some will have the grimaced face, some will have sweat starting to drip off the brow. Everyone's different.
Couldn't agree more, absolutely. And we're watching, you know, it's amazing now looking at the extended warm-up that the players do. There's been a group out there at this, and the Bulldogs are at the punt road end of the MCG tonight, and some of them have been out there for 25 or 30 minutes running around doing their own routine. I mean, we started an era where you weren't allowed on the green stuff at all.
Yeah, Terry Wallace was the first to
introduce it. It's not that long ago, is it? Which seems ridiculous now, given that that is part of what players go through. Were you an early operator, Jay? Did you get out there early and kick a footy around?
I'd get to the ground very early, but I was pretty busy with various tasks of getting every joint strapped and a massage and a few remedial exercises, but I certainly wasn't kicking 50-metre lobs before the game the last few years of my career.
This bloke here fascinates me, Duke, Liam Picken. The transformation in his career over the last 30 games, it's been extraordinary.
You know what I love, Jim? You talk about how you can improve a club really quickly who maybe is struggling. Players get pigeonholed and, you know, you're a tagger, you can go and do a job for us. That's about all you've got in your weaponry. And then someone else comes in and says, hey, I see a lot more in you. I see the ability to not only do that, but you're a good overhead mark. You can play forward. We think you can, in your own right, be a good midfielder. At times, he's gone and done a job in defence. So his whole world's opened up. And I see a lot about that in this group that I've watched closely in the last 2 years. 2 years ago, Mitch Wallace is not playing tonight. He could only tag as well, but he's able to accumulate a lot of possession. So you get growth, I think, by the development of the group and the coaching. And he's one that doesn't surprise me how well he's going.
He took so long to get his chance at AFL level, Dust, didn't he? 2009, he played his first game. I checked last night. Every year since 2009, which was his debut year, he's played 20 or more games in them, and yet he's been as unobtrusive, as I think as Jim said, until the last season and a half, as any player ever to play. 173 games to his name going into tonight, and you hardly know him.
And they love him, one of the most respected. Yep. I've got a theory, Juddy, that the ones that find it hard at the start, Dean Cox, your good mate, one of them who's a rookie listed player, the ones that have to go through adversity to get there, Dale Morris came off the rookie list, they're the most resilient ones. Once they get it going, they tend to be the most solid players you have.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the reasons why clubs try not to just hand out games. You often hear people ask, why isn't this early draft pick playing? He's playing VFL. And if their form's not good enough and they get selected, it can get them into really bad habits for the rest of their career. One thing about the Dogs that I think they've done really well over the journey is when they had that clean out a few years ago and tried to get a few of the older players out, they didn't get rid of the really good blokes. You know, they kept Morris, they kept Picken, they kept Boyd, they kept Rob Murphy. They seem to be really selective with the type of old guys that they kept around the club, and I think that's really helping this younger group now.
Other thing with this bloke, Liam Picken, Duke, is his old man's a legend, isn't he? He's a legend of the competition,
Billy
Liam Picken.
Yeah.
I have never seen him interviewed by anyone. I've never seen him inject himself into his kid's career or be in any way obtrusive or even, you know, like I find that staggering, you know, to be the son of such an amazing figure in the game and his old man be so, I think, amazingly sort of magnanimous almost in saying, right, oh, well, I'm out and it's your turn. I reckon it's brilliant.
The older brother Marcus played about 20 or 30 games. He was started at Brisbane and came down to the Bulldogs as well and didn't quite get there, but they're pretty humble sort of family, the Picken family, Chief.
I think the fact that he's played those 20 games per year and we don't notice him speaks volumes towards what you were saying, Jig, is he just does a job every week. He's reliable. And you kind of don't worry about him. He's one of those blokes that you just pick. You know he's going to give you what he gives you. And he goes and does it. But now he's added a few other strings to his bow. He just looks like a bloke playing with freedom that's really enjoying the game.
The Hawks have a massive night ahead of them. And one of their senior coaches is down. Himself, a legend of the game, Brett Ratton. I think he's ready to go. Howie, welcome to you. Have you got rats?
Yeah, I have. And he was just saying to me, by gee, for a bloke that didn't want to be involved in the media, Chris Judd's popping up a bit, as he is a man that you looked after. Now, I'm just sitting here. It's a funny game, footy, isn't it, Rats? We're just sitting here watching Isaac Smith literally in front of us, just bang them through, left foot, right foot, no foot. He can't miss at the moment. Was anything said during the week? I know there's a lot of moments in a game of football, but do you need to take a player aside at any point or not?
No, he's fine. Is he? He's just had a lot of fun on the track and just moved on very quickly. And I think he's 11 straight, as you said. And he'll be fine tonight, and he'll kick the goals we need him.
And Rats, how you going, mate?
Good, mate. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Your halfbacks really controlled the game for big periods last week. Will you be looking to get that uncontested ball across your halfback line again tonight?
Yeah, hopefully we can rebound and not allow them to get inside 50. But I think the clearances will be really important, Chris, in regards to, you know, Mitchell and Bontempelli and those matchups with McAvoy and Roughhead in regards to who can get the clearances and actually get territory in the game, because the Bulldogs like to take a lot of ground on opposition, get it inside 50 and really lock it in there. So hopefully we can win that battle.
What did you take out of their game against West Coast, Rats? There must have been a couple of things that you thought maybe there's an area there that we can have a crack at them.
Well, they were very good, Jace. They really controlled the game. Their mids got a hold of the footy, and they probably tinkered with their ball movement a little bit. They put a lot more pulled kicks into their play, so they didn't go long down the line as much. They probably pulled the kick a bit and made it hard for McGovern and these blokes to get involved in the game, and they really took them out of it. So we have to be mindful of that, and hopefully we're ready. And if they're going to kick it a little bit shorter, hopefully we can rebound a bit quicker from there.
Hey, Rats, well done on a great year again, and the chance... with history still alive, well and truly with an incredible four-peat, if that does get over the line. Bontempelli's a player a lot of sides have put a lot of time into. Will you have a special bit of focus on him?
We'll have to watch. You know, early on, he's such an important player, but we've got some midfielders that hopefully, whether we run with him or take him on, that'll happen throughout the game. But he's such a good player and really generates a lot of footy for him, and he just uses it so well. You know, he's 6 foot two or three through the middle there. He's big, and he really controls a lot of the stoppages and the way they go about it.
Brett, Josh Gibson has twice won best and fairest in premiership years, and yet people have queried the past 6 to 8 weeks of his season this year. How have you seen it?
I think at times, like all players, you know, there's quarters that you're not as strong as previous week or during the game. He's had some down moments like everybody else, but he's just a quality player, and his ability to intercept in the contest, whether it's a mark or a spoil, is right up there with the best. So, he'll have a great game tonight and really set us up, hopefully, from half back.
Okay. The Bulldogs last week did something different to the West Coast forward line, how they brought the ball forward. It was different to how they had played for a lot of the year. Do you expect them to do something similar tonight against Hawthorn?
It's been interesting because we didn't play them. I think it was round three this year, so it's been a long time, and we've probably scouted a lot of games to have a look at their MCG games against Melbourne and Collingwood, and then probably their last 4 or 5 weeks. So we've had a look at a lot of football. With Bevo, he's not going to just play the same way all the time, but he'll try things. He's he's very much on the front foot as a coach, and he'll try it, and if it doesn't work, he'll tinker with something else. So I expect him to maybe do a few things that are slightly different, maybe because of the size of this ground compared to Paterson Stadium. It's a lot different, so I think he'll tinker with it a bit.
Yep. Rats, I know your entire focus will be on tonight, but you personally, is the flame still alive for you to be a senior coach again?
I think one day, hopefully, the chance comes up. But if it doesn't, it doesn't. I'm happy to be involved in footy. I love footy. So whether one day I get the chance to be a senior coach or just keep being an assistant coach, I love being involved in the game. And the game's been great to me, and I really enjoy it. So who knows what will happen down the track.
Good luck tonight, Rats. Appreciate your time.
Good on you, fellas.
Thanks. Take
care. Purple, the Wolfpack on a Friday night are at their most vociferous.
They are.
What are we getting?
I think they're having a few. And Ash C, I'm not saying he has, but... he loved Chief's description of Lee Matthews as, quote, a surly little critter, as did many, many others. Aldrin, yep. Pagoli. Only the great Chief can get away with saying that about Lee Matthews. Deb
true.
Cannon, the former pack leader, I think, Jim, yes. Has weighed in, and she wants a shout out. The boys are in Toronto listening to The Rub. They love it. Shout out to them.
Good city, Toronto.
To Cod too. Royal, Broadview Hawks, I think she's referring to there. So, yep. No, they're loving the Chief's work tonight.
Well, and then they're about to love it even more because... I'm pretty confident it's Golf Bag back in the studio. Hit it, Golf.
Ship the hell off.
Ship off.
Ship off.
Ship off.
Find a little boat and ship the hell off. It's an interesting one tonight, Jim, because yes. I haven't found anything really that's entered the sporting realm. Oh. So I've gone a little bit outside of that.
Yes.
I'm not It's fair to say I'm politically apathetic, mm-hmm. but I find myself forever dabbling in politics when it comes to this segment.
And we like it.
And the latest one is Pauline Hanson.
Oh, come on.
Now, let's just for a moment forget about the content of what she's saying. Mm. But she's addressing the Senate for the first time this time around.
Yes.
The very first time. What about being prepared, Pauline?
Oh.
I mean, she's come out with poor delivery.
Oh, no.
Poor and incorrect pronunciation. A real monotone style. It's your maiden speech. Your maiden speech, perhaps you could have read it once or twice before you actually ran through it. And then she described herself as a bit of a John Farnham-like comeback.
Oh, no.
I think she can ship off. Oh! Now, this is an interesting one. A grandmother's neighbour in a country village in the UK. She took issue with this poor old grandmother because she'd hung a pair of black frilly knickers on the line. And the neighbour thought it was inappropriate because it was opposite a primary school. So she took the knickers off the line and stuffed them in poor old grandmother's letterbox. I hate the moral police. They absolutely drive me crazy. And mm-hmm. this woman is obviously the type that wears the giant bog catchers. probably holding the Bobby Lutz in and just no good whatsoever.
The big Mario Milano.
Yes, she can just ship right off. I don't like people being the moral police. I love the story of the bloke in Hampton Park that got pulled over for driving a car with the number plates, "I'm a knob."
Yeah.
Unregistered with false plates. How dumb can you be? And when the police said to him, what are you doing? He goes, he pointed at the plates and said, well, I'm a knob.
Yeah, that's it.
Got everything he deserved and probably needs a little bit more. So he probably needs a clip just to get himself really going. The people of Capel Sound.
Hmm? Where is that, Chief?
Formerly Rosebud West.
All right.
These are residents that voted for a name change. And you can only imagine the costs of signage and the administration involved, the effect it has on local business owners and the like, just because some people didn't like the name of the suburb they lived in. Here's a thought. Move. Get the hell out and ship off, surely. There are more pressing issues.
Yes.
And one final one, Jim. I just needed to have a look at the box here. I think, Jim, you've been a bit of a flog.
Yep.
Juddy for torching a car park pass and Duke for being a ruckman. You can all ship off.
Just a strafing. Just an end of ship off strafing.
It's broadside of the whole box.
That's it. Just speaking of Golf Bag, of course, who is back in the studio pushing the buttons for us, and of course the assistant on the rush hour, I had a look at the little pie warmer that's there between the hot breakfast studio and the rush hour studio.
Which we loaded up this morning with some chicken parma pies that are only Triple M footy accessible.
Exactly right. The 4 and 20s, unbelievable. I looked at it because I went into the fridge below to get my fruit out, and there I saw two pies that had been named. So Golf Bag's named his own pie and then put him in there because he's of the opinion other Nipsies steal them. I'm like, Golf, they're complimentary. We own them. They're our pies. He's named them.
He's put a tag on
them. He's put a tag on them, but more than one too, because he reckons sometimes later at night he gets hungry and needs to go for a second. I tidy it up, Golf. Fair dinkum. Purple, tell us about Etihad Stadium, please. Are the AFL buying it? And if so, when?
It seems that way, Jim. That we know that they've been keen on exploring the possibilities of doing so before the contract expires, which is the end of 2025. And what we're hearing now is that at an AFL commission meeting 2 weeks ago, and clearly a directive came out of that to get this wrapped up, because I've been told they've been locked in talks almost daily since in some form about executing this deal now. So the way I read it yesterday when we got told about this was that they were hoping to do it before Christmas and maybe even by the end of October. So I would expect that now to be done. Once the AFL does have the appetite to do it, they will do it. I think they're just dotting I's and crossing T's, working out some intricacies of it. And obviously the figure, which I'd imagine wouldn't be made public, they'll be wanting to get it down to as low as $150 million. And Etihad Stadium, people will be trying to get it up to about $250 million. Obviously there's $100 million in between somewhere, and they'll settle in there somewhere, I would think, when it's all said and done.
And their plan for it is to business as usual?
Yeah, business as usual with a twist. They want a lot of state government money, as we know. They don't enter into stadium deals themselves without having the significant levels of financial contributions by all tiers of government. They want to revamp it, obviously. It is now, in a sporting context, an ageing stadium, and that's part of the issue too, by way of buying it earlier rather than waiting till 2025. But what they can do and what they are going to be able to do already in a
what is a confined space now. I mean, you, when you think when it was first launched, there was nothing around it. Now there's buildings on top of it as well. So they're limited in a regard. But again, I'm sure they've waded through this and would be having heads of agreements already reached, I would think, with some levels of government. But yeah, the plan, as far as I know it to be, is to keep it as a footy stadium, because there has been some talk about bulldozing it and moving elsewhere. But as far as I know, they do intend to keep it.
So they're talking about a $300 million facelift or thereabouts. Surely something, a project of that size is going to mean that the ground has to be taken out of play for a period of time. That would have serious ramifications on, given you've got three or four tenants there.
But if you own it,
how do they manage that?
If you own it, Chief, I mean, you might be able to get the surface itself, you know, sorted out in the off season or whatever you need to do to it in the off season.
So you think they could do that and not lose any use of the ground?
Well, there's 45 games or thereabouts, aren't there, that are played there. I don't know how they would distribute those games without having use of it. And I think that's the plan with it. I mean, they'll run it as an events stadium as well.
So there'll still be concerts and
yeah,
all.
I'd imagine. I think they'd have to, Dust. I don't think you can make the big money that you want. And that's why, that's the challenge for Geelong too. I mean, ultimately it's a ground used seven times a year on the back of that extraordinary redevelopment there. So
BBL too in the summer.
That's where the issue is too, because
Renegades play there. Four or five games there. It is a cracking venue for cricket, by the way. Yep. So they would have to... Yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they did all that. $300 million is a hell of a lot to spend renovating an existing ground, isn't it?
I haven't heard that figure, Chief. I'd imagine it would. If you're going to do it, they'd want to spend that much on it. The interesting outcome will be, I mean, there's been an expectation that the moment they get their hands on it by way of ownership, that all the problems with finances relating to it just disappear. I'm convinced they won't disappear. There'll be a bun fight over how much the clubs do get it. There will be an improvement. It has to be, but it won't be the nirvana that I think the tenant clubs, Jim, and your club is one of them.
Yep.
I don't think it's just going to be a click your fingers, AFL owns it, hey, happy days. It will not be that simple. It never is.
We'll wait and see with bated breath.
But that should line up with comparable deals everywhere else, and that's all you're expecting. And the AFL have those numbers. So I'd be amazed if the tenant clubs there can't get similar returns. I'm with you.
Be using it as a revenue raiser themselves, though.
Of course they will.
And that's always a challenge when you're trying to get some of their money out of them. So look, it'll play out. But it is the right thing to do for football to do. Just another quick political one, Jim. Yep. The focus on Footy Group, we touched on this last night on the footy show. They finally secured the meeting that they'd long wanted with key people from the Richmond Footy Club, including Peggy O'Neill, the president of the club. They'd set aside a period of time on Wednesday this week to meet inside the city offices there, and 45 minutes before it was meant to start, they pulled out of the meeting.
No. Are you serious?
Yep. All scheduled, all set to
go. Why did they pull out?
Peggy, I believe, and other directors from the club were there and prepared to finally listen to whatever it was they wanted to say to them, but... they pulled out.
Is that it, Damo, from that group?
They just
think it was already
momentum,
Dust, but momentum.
Oh, please.
It's one of the more astounding things I've ever heard. When Damo said on the footy show last night, I wasn't aware of the story, and I had to interrupt you, didn't I? I said, you can't seriously tell me that this group pulled out of a meeting they organised.
And had been complaining about not having had access to that very point.
I think they might be shipped off too.
They've left themselves nowhere to go, have they? Honestly, they don't have a platform.
Well, they claimed the Neil Barm appointment. They did. They put out a statement in world record time saying as much.
Very, very few benefits, Duke, in the absence of our great mate Gary Lyon. Of course, a supreme football analyst and a great part of Triple M Footy for as long as I can remember. Very, very good at what he does. But I would say, in fact, the only benefit we've had for the whole year out of his absence is that this particular weekend, we haven't had to hear about the fact that he kicked 10 goals in the final against Footscray.
Because 15 years running, that has been the top of the agenda item semi-final. He terrorised Matty Croft that final.
Yep.
Kicked 10 and...
Duke, he's terrorised us ever since.
Look, remember
in the most shameless way, he's brought it up and shoehorned it into every conversation, Juddy, for 10 years.
It's what you do when you retire. You can't let people forget, can you? So
so the good thing with Purple is he's let it go this year and we haven't had to hear about
it. No, not at all this year. No. But remember the year he demanded that he get some footy record space?
Yep.
Three pages
and three pages.
Cover story.
That's it.
And actually relive the 10 goals. Yep. Went onto the ground where he kicked each of the 10.
Yep. So I'm glad we haven't had to do
that. It's a good point you raise there, Jim.
That's all, as I say, one of the only benefits. Although I might have might have been told on the way in that perhaps he's just fired around.
A little text.
My phone's out of action, so I haven't received it, but he might have just reminded
the big nose producer
close enough to us that this might have been the weekend. Daniel G in Syracuse is now down on the boundary. I'm pretty confident he's down there, and how he's remained down there. Howie, down to you.
Indeed, Jim. Always great to see you, G. A massive night for the footy club, a footy club you've been involved with for so long. All the professionalism of football and the game plans and the structures, etc. Do you actually get a chance as a coach now to get excited about the fact that your footy club is playing in such a big game?
Oh, yeah, you definitely do. You know, you try to embrace the week. You know, we had a couple of thousand supporters out there yesterday and all the diehards, and they probably should be at work and school and things like that. But we do get excited, but we have to be composed. We've got a job to do, and the boys can't wait to get out there.
Just a quick one to ask. I'm not sure what you're wearing, but gee, you smell nice tonight, gee. What are you, right? You smell beautiful tonight.
Thank you. I try my best. You know.
What have you got on?
I wouldn't know what it's on. Okay. The wife picked it, and I just do whatever she says.
Beautiful.
And she would have dressed him too. Would have been laid out on the bed along with the aftershave and the whole package. He does what he's told on the home front, Danny, as you should. Now, I want to ask you about Bevo tonight. We've been able to get some great access to some of what he said last week in the build-up. He's an emotional individual, Danny. What's been the hook tonight? What's he been on about in the build-up?
Oh, he's had a theme that he started. We had a camp in Lawn, so he's had a theme. I won't go into what the theme is, but he's kept going with that. He used it again last week. He doesn't bring it out every week, and he's gone with that again. And I think in finals like this, it's all about, you know, the physicality, but he's always got something just at the end that gets the boys going. So we'll be looking forward to them coming out hard and hopefully matching it with the Hawks.
Hey, Gia, are you torn between two passions tonight?
Why is that, Chase?
Who did you barrack for growing up?
I barracked for the Hawks, and I had 19 on the back, actually. I figured out that I wasn't going to be in the goal square, so then I put number 9 on there. So, yes, but no, definitely a Bulldog through and through now.
I didn't realise that.
That didn't pick me up. I was telling
Jake earlier, I saw a little bit of the 2008 qualifying final between Hawthorn and the Bulldogs today, yeah. And Dennis Cometti actually said that when you took a mark and you were lining up for goal. And I thought, I didn't realise
he had my number on his back.
I never knew I was his favourite player, of course, Jim, but that's probably part of the course.
I did watch a bit of that game today, and there wasn't much defence getting
it was end-to-end.
The game's changed in about 7 years.
It certainly has, and one of the things I think that the Bulldogs have done best is to shore up the defensive aspect of the game. That's something that I think's really stood out this season.
Yeah, Bevo's obviously brought that defensive system. He's really passionate about it, and we probably haven't been the offensive side we would have liked to be in this year, but the defence has always been there. You know, last week to keep West Coast to 52 points with what they've got up in their forward line was fantastic. We were able to use our offence from that defence, so we'll be looking to do that again tonight. Hopefully it all clicks into gear.
And Gia, Jake Stringer's a player who looks like he's down on confidence for mine. Have you done anything different with him this week to try and get him going?
No, not too much. You know, just trying to build that confidence, Juddy. I think he's a confidence player. I've stopped trying to figure out what's going on through not only Jake's head, but players' heads, you know, before games and during the week and things like that. But we're confident he's not far away from turning it on, and what a better stage to do it tonight in front of the Hawks supporters and ours. And if he does get hot, watch out, because it'll be a fair show.
Hey, Danny, Joe's been talking about second up being difficult. Libra and McRae, second up after a really good comeback game with an extended period out. Have you had any input into how they might overcome that?
I think that we got an 8-day break. I think that's the one thing about playing on a Thursday. They had a really good lead up. You know, Libba, he's just a mental beast. He just takes anything on. He really shouldn't probably be doing what he's doing. And to be able to do what he did last week, Jack McRae's the same. He's no frills, Jack. He just goes about his business. So I've got no doubt that those two will really step up again for us tonight.
Daniel, we talked before about the impact of Liam Picken over the time in the game for him. Started in 2009 when you were still playing. Could you envisage him becoming the player he's become when you first saw him play that game in early 2009?
Yeah, probably not what he's doing in terms of the offensive side of the game and just letting himself go. He was more just that dour tagging type player or playing in the back line. And it's credit to Bevo. You know, when he first came in, he wanted him to, you know, try different things on in his game. He gave him that confidence. He wanted him, I think there was one stage early in Bevo's tenure that he said, I want you to get 8 possessions a quarter. Like, what coach goes out and says that? He had 28, kicked a couple, and since then he's been an offensive weapon for us. always knew he could catch the footy, but, you know, it's a credit to both of them, really. Bevo give him the confidence and Pico to take it on, and to be the player he is, he's amazing for us.
There's so many amazing stories with the Bulldogs and what they've done to this point of this season. Daniel, Josh Dunkley is one of those, isn't he? And he's really coming of age very quickly, isn't he?
Yeah, he's built for finals footy. He's a professional kid. You know, he didn't like being out of the side earlier in the year. Asks a lot of questions, and he's always trying to get better. So, you know, I just showed in his first final last week. You know, he's a tough, strong kid, and he'll be in amongst it again tonight.
Gia, are you disgusted at how shamelessly your old mate Nathan Brown's jumped back on the Western Bulldogs?
Oh, he has from afar, but if he ever came down to the club and their supporters in the Barkers Cafe, then he'd know that he's not wanted by them. And everyone knows he left for cash, and he loves his cash, Nate. But he was a big part of our footy club. There's a few guys that are really close with him still, and it didn't go too well for him at Richmond. So we're happy to get him back.
I think we cut him adrift. I think he's gone.
All right, Dust, he's gone.
He's
no
gone.
Worries.
We're right.
Hey, good luck, Gia. Massive night for your footy club. I know you'll all be nervous, but we hope it goes well for you.
No worries, guys. Thanks very much for having me.
Daniel G and Syracuse, one of the good men, Duke, in footy, and has been a great servant of your club.
Very talented coach too, Jim. He was one of the guys that was eyeing it off probably 10 years before he finished, and you know, generally sees that as his pathway, and I think he'll have a lot to offer anyone in the future, whether it's senior coaching or in the role he's doing now. Good man.
We are just watching the Hawks out there now. They're coming out to do their pre-match warm-up. I ask you this question, Chris Judd, and... sort of chief, I guess, even more than the other two because of your exposure to grand finals. This ground at the moment could not be in better condition, and the conditions couldn't be better. I think it's probably about 12 or 13 degrees, maybe even a little more. Virtually no wind. You couldn't script a better night for footy. Do we need a grand final played in these conditions instead of 3 in the afternoon?
I think twilight grand final would probably be best. About 5 o'clock. I don't think you want to put it on so it's too late for kids to be able to watch. I have some great memories as a, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 year old watching grand finals. I think it's good for the even little kids to be able to watch it. But I think sort of a 5 o'clock twilight game would be better for the corporate entertaining beforehand. And I think it would still be accessible to everyone. So I think that would work best.
Chief?
Look, there's no doubt the conditions are perfect, Jim, but it really doesn't matter when you have it. There's no guarantee that you're going to get these conditions,
true.
Are there?
That's true.
We're just very thankful, particularly given the last week in Melbourne has been absolutely abominable. The weather, and we get a night like this, that's brilliant. And funnily enough, the same thing happened last Friday night.
Yep.
It had been raining for days, and all of a sudden it cleared up. A little bit slippery, but we were treated to a pretty high standard game last Friday night. Hopefully we'll get the same again tonight.
Makes no sense at all. We don't have at least a twilight. I'll concede twilight, but every other finalist played at night. To not be able to maximise the day and the evening and the television attendance, no one can give me a good reason
why
that's not the case.
I must admit, Duke, I've always been of the view that don't fix it if it isn't broken, and I love the daytime element to it. But when I... Well, the two things, Purple. Firstly, going to the Super Bowl and seeing that at night time is a special thing. But then coming here tonight and looking at what we see from this commentary box now, I mean, this is an extraordinary stadium anyway. I happen to believe it's one of the best in the world, if not the best. Full, and the game starting at 7:30 under lights. I'm now starting to swing around, I must admit, to the fact that...
To go into prime time, though, as the biggest sporting event. And we've lost the number one ranking in terms of the biggest sporting attended and watched in terms of the NRL and state of origin. It's gone past the AFL Grand Final. You have to get that back. And the way to do that is to go twilight. I think twilight's a good...
You're making a day of it. It feels a bit rushed, Grand Final day, I reckon.
Yeah.
Like you're at lunch at 12, sort of, you know, downing a few beers. I think it'd be much better.
After you've done a few cashies in the morning, Jody, is it?
Well, I'm contributing back to the game, Damien, is how I'd frame that statement. But... yeah, it feels a bit rushed when you're running around trying to get all the cashies done.
and it really squeezes a North Melbourne breakfast into the morning, and that needs a bit more room to breathe. For Coates High, you're listening to the footy preview. Sorry, Pat.
I know, we just got reminded by someone we were talking about before that he may have kicked those 10 goals in the space of 2.5 quarters.
Oh, no.
I think the Wolf is listening.
This is what we're talking about. You just knew it, Duke. He could not stay out of it.
He can't, can he?
This week was always going to get his attention, and clearly it has.
Jim, is this an extraordinary sign of arrogance from the Hawthorn Football Club, the chief intimately involved? They have surrounded this ground with their premiership flags in what is supposed to be a neutral stage, the MCG.
I couldn't agree with you anymore.
So on what basis do they get to take ownership of the ground, Chief?
Everyone's allowed to, Duke. It's just hard to surround an oval with one flag.
Have you ever known a man? to be able to deliver it.
As I said, the arrogance that comes out of this football club.
You started the sledging, so you got to cop it when you started, all right?
I was just pointing
out
the
fact. Need to be a big flag.
And you're not bullying him either, are you?
Well, it's a nice segue into what, Juddy, I know you a keen observer of what happened during the week up in Sydney, of course, with GWS and the Swans. How does all of the discussion sit with you?
Well, I was very excited by the King's article today saying that any individual sledging full stop should be banned, which I think was an interesting initiative.
Hang on, the King being Wayne Carey saying this.
Toying with the idea of maybe the AFL could start a satisfactory sledging committee, of which I'd be happy to put my name up as the chairman.
Really?
And we could have players ride in on a Thursday afternoon about the sledges they're proposing on the weekend. We could either give them the green light or the red light, what depending on if they were...
The SSC.
The SSC. And we'd need a few study trips, obviously.
New York?
The Chinese are years ahead of sledging, so I think Hong Kong and China would be on the list for a study tour, and maybe the states around Super Bowl time as well, just to see what the other codes are doing. Because we want to be ahead of the game, Purple.
Yeah. Champions League final in Germany?
I think it'd be rude not to be there. and see what the other countries are doing. Really get ahead of the game, Purple. So I'm happy to be a part of that. We'd be a part of the integrity unit. I wouldn't obviously answer to Brett Clothier, but...
No, you don't answer to anyone.
I don't think so. It'd be a standalone unit.
The cloth.
But I think it's important. And I think Ducks raised some very good points.
Well, what did he raise? For those people who haven't read his article in The Age today, it seemed to fly in the face of what he said on radio 48 hours earlier.
Well, he believes that you shouldn't be able to say anything that's not football related on a football field. And Chief, we got your support. Is the SSC got your support in this movement?
I like the theory behind it. Absolutely. It's interesting though, because I reckon there's a few out there that don't always prepare their sledges. Some of them are quick-witted and it just rolls off the tongue when they get there. So you're taking away the ability to actually be spontaneous. That's my only concern with it.
Okay.
What I always find...
Chief may be taking the SSC a little bit too literally.
But has the Duck done an about-face?
He's done one of the great backflips of all time.
It needs to be addressed tomorrow on Saturday.
You need to actually address this with him and find out what is going on.
Norton's a man who hasn't taken a backward step in his life.
We might need two segments for this, Jim. It's extraordinary turnaround.
Yeah, he was one that took exception to the fact that what was reported about Shane Mumford, like me, the line that has been reported, that we're only aware of what he said, is, aren't you normally on holidays this time? And I was one that thought that was within the bounds of... It wouldn't have to go to your committee, Juddy, that one. That one, you'd just be able to get out there. And that's well within the line, because you get educated on the line, Damo. You get told where it is. And so anything, from my understanding, below the line is fine. If you go over it, well, you get dealt with, Juddy.
Well, that's a good point. But when arguably the greatest player of the game comes out and says this, do you sort of feel that you probably owe Dean Cox an apology, considering he's born with a big nose? He can't help that. It's part of who he is.
See, I forgot that completely until you brought it up a couple of weeks ago. And that, to me, they're the things that make you laugh the most.
I mean, someone
having a crack at you on the football field, to me, is just as humorous as it possibly gets. And you can't take offence, unless it's in the category that we know, which is racial and religious vilification. It was game on, and it was an entertaining part. And the thing, when you catch up with Dean Cox and have a beer, you'll have a laugh about those exact things.
Do you take offence when Chief calls you a bottle cleaner? What do you call him?
A pipe cleaner
and a head in the vice and all that sort of stuff?
No, I take more offence that you have to recycle it and bring it up. And I sat in this chair and the first words that were uttered to me were your pencil neck, pipe cleaning.
Mr. Squiggle.
Mr. Squiggle.
It raises the question though, Duke. When does personal abuse cross the line? When is it bullying or whatever?
I think what we should stop trying to do is trying to get a consensus on these things. We understand the thing that's black and white in terms of right and wrong is racist, religious and sexual vilification, but everything else is different. People have different opinions on it, and if you're outraged by something, well, you're allowed to be outraged by it, but it doesn't mean people that aren't outraged are wrong.
The reason we're talking about this is that I think the mental health space is one now that is in almost in a footy, what's said on the ground perspective, in that zone of racial and religious vilification, in that it's a no-go zone full stop. And I think that's why we're talking about it, and that's why when you sort of joke about it being a satisfying sledging committee, that's why what Shane Mumford did say to Buddy Franklin is, in my eyes, Darce, and I know you've got good reason to have your opinion on it, I still feel we've just, as an industry, got to move away from actually wanting to go down that space.
I think we need to avoid that sort of abuse at any opportunity. But the query I would raise then, Warrie, is what happens if you said something along those lines to someone that you didn't know was suffering from a mental health issue, but they actually do suffer from mental health?
I think that's why I'm saying we've just got to stop it as well. And
Stop sledging it
But I suppose, again, what you're all saying is what is and what isn't directed at a person. When is it actually directed at the mental health space? And you're right in raising the question, Chief, which is why I just think we need to just stop any referencing to anything that could be construed as the mental health criticism.
The SSC will take that under advice, Purple. Thank you, Jaddy.
I always think, Duke, that there is far more fascination with this from people who don't play than people who do and have, is my opinion.
There's no doubt about that.
Especially when we discussed on the midweek rub, there's no greater sledging game than cricket. And when I played in the 90s and 80s, it was no holds barred. So my poor mum, Joni, some of the things that happened to her and was reported to have happened to her. That's just what happened. And you had a view that if you weren't able to cope with that, then you had no right being out there. And so that's just how it was. But the needle's moved. That's what you're a bit younger than me, and so is Juddy, but Chief and I are about the same age. The needle has moved.
And I understand the needle's moved, Jim, but as Juddy eloquently said, as he always does, there are categories that you are educated on. You understand that there are no-go zones, and if new areas pop up, educate people on it. But aside from that, do you want to water down the world and be so outraged by things that matter? This group was that Triple M has a bullying culture. The thing that I love about team sport, and I love the fact my kids play team sport, is because you walk in, and if you've got a slightly different haircut, or if you're slightly, your shirt's a different colour, or you're slightly getting ahead of yourself, you get brought down to earth in a brilliant way.
Yep.
At the same time, when someone has genuinely got an issue, you get your arm put around you more than in any other space I could possibly imagine. And people who haven't experienced that, and the higher you get up the chain, the higher you play, the more it filters out people that way.
Yes.
And in a brilliant fashion. So I think those that haven't actually played enough team sport at a high enough level don't understand the good-natured part of what that banter is. And to try and dissect it, and if it's not in that category, then it's game on.
And you can't compare it to something you say to someone at the water cooler at work. It's just a different environment.
Yeah.
I was wondering.
Is it though? Is it?
Yes. Yes, it is, Purple.
It's still a workplace, isn't it?
Trust me, I've been out there, Purple. Very different.
It's a workplace though, and it's a reason we're talking about this.
But it's a combative,
aggressive. It's a unique work. You tackle people and throw them to the ground. You're bumping them as hard as you can. You're trying to knee them in the back of the head. Do that at the water cooler.
Standing on the water cooler and hammering someone into the deck.
It's a unique environment, and we can't get away from the fact that you come here to escape the real world. The more we infect this with real world issues, the less this is going to become an escape, and this is work again.
I agree with that argument, but go back to 1995 when the very first case of vilification was established, and look how far we have come in that short time.
And we're right on that. But you look at that final, Sydney versus GWS. The best part of that finals weekend for me was that the little brother in GWS beat up on Sydney, and they physically beat up on them, and they went after them, and it was unbelievable, combative and aggressive, and escape from reality, as Juddy said. Lance Franklin runs in and goes up to Big Mummy, who is the one-man wrecking ball and terrorising them all, and says, the reason you're not here, mate, is because of me, because they had to pay me, and that's why you're out. What do we expect Mummy to say? I'm sorry, Lance. Yeah, it's great to catch up with you, and I hope you have a good afternoon. If he fires back within the realms, we've got to see that is play on, Damo, and to have 8 pages of outrage for it for the rest of the week, taking away from the brilliance of what GWS is ridiculous.
Careful, Jeff. You'll get criticised again for having that view, Dave.
Is it possible to lay a claim on someone retrospectively? Because Merv Hughes for 10 years. There must be a council that I can actually go to.
Juddy's council.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
It'll be a parent company of another.
There'll be a FIFA service for retrospective claims.
Ricky Gervais, I think, is the man, Juddy, who was quoted as saying, just because you're outraged doesn't mean you're right.
Yeah.
That's something we need to remember.
I claimed it as my own, but I'm sure Ricky
it is very important to remember.
We're becoming a permanent outraged society and community, and particularly here in Melbourne, Australia. It is out of control.
Shut up! The footy's on Triple M!
Triple M rocks football.